We made this.
Sea Devil.
It's coming straight for us.
That's impossible. Madam Ching! Pirate Queen!
Where's the crew?
That'll be us.
We don't stand a chance.
Yes, did you just stand up like this?
You're like a kid sometimes.
Thanks! Say hello to my crew.
The world has been disrupted.
Because of you. Because of what you unleashed.
You want to create chaos.
It is our time.
Man the cannons.
The ship is going down!
TARDIS Crew, a Doctor Who podcast for the We Made This podcast network. I'm Baz Greenend, and I'm joined as usual in my adventure through time and space by my son Ben, the biggest Doctor Who fan this side of Gallifrey. How are you today, Ben?
Well, I mean, quite excited, happy, well, you know.
I say, well, we've literally just come off watching the episode Legend of the Sea Devils, and we've got a guest on the TARDIS to join us for the discussion. It's fellow We Made This podcaster and host of Neil Before Pods, Craig McKenzie. Craig, how are you?
Hello, I'm doing good. I have been rescued from the watery depths, or whatever that was about.
Fab. So, yeah, it's great to have you on. We talked about having you on the TARDIS crew for a while now. I know you're, like us, you're a Doctor Who fan. So, before we get into the discussion on Legends of the Sea Devils itself, anyone new to the TARDIS crew, we like to kind of indoctrinate them in the Doctor Who fandom by asking a few questions. So, I'm going to hand over to Ben, and you're going to ask Craig a kind of few questions about his Doctor Who fandom, aren't you?
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah, okay. So, let's start first with probably the most obvious one there is. Who is your favourite Doctor?
So, of the Doctors I've seen, I've not seen them all. I basically only got into it following the reboot, or the return. It's not a reboot, but I would say Capaldi is my favourite of the lot. I just really like his Doctor. I didn't like him at first, but I really warmed to him as time went on. So, Capaldi.
Yeah, well, I mean, Capaldi's my favourite. No, he's not. What am I on about? No. Capaldi's the best Doctor. Matt Smith is my favourite. I got that weird. Okay. So when... You've kind of answered this then. So did you get into Doctor Who with the revival?
Yeah, that's when I started watching it. Although, growing up, I was aware of it. And you kind of catch these things through osmosis sometimes. UK Gold was a Sky Channel back in the day. And it was always on, say, a Saturday afternoon or whatever. And when I was young and had no money... Now I'm older and have no money, so there's not much difference. But I would sit and maybe watch it sometimes. I wouldn't really take it in. So, like, Tom Baker was very much my image of the Doctor whenever I thought about it, which is probably the case with pretty much everybody before the revival happened. He was probably the face of Doctor Who for such a long time. So, yeah. And then I think I watched Curse of Fatal Death when it was on that Children in Need, when they did that. But, yeah, I don't remember it. Or don't remember it at the time, so... Yeah, basically with the revival, that's when I got into it.
Fair enough. And then finally, how have you been feeling with the 13th Doctor era so far? Have you enjoyed it? Have you despised it?
Where do you sit on the Jodie Whittaker's Doctor and the era?
So, I'm going to be unpopular on the internet and I'm not going to get off the fence here. I'm just going to say that I thought it was okay. There's some good episodes, there's some bad episodes. I do think that Jodie Whittaker's problem is that she hasn't had a strong writing team behind her, which is a real shame because she hasn't really had a chance to shine as a Doctor in the way that others have. She hasn't really had a standout episode in the way that others have. So yeah, it's been okay. I don't think it's anything I'll ever go back and revisit at any point. So yeah, it's been fine. It's a shame that she doesn't get better quality stories, really.
Yeah, I mean...
She's been great.
I mean, I was thinking recently, actually, Chris Chibnall has written almost every single one of her scripts. I was thinking, like, with RTD coming back, hopefully he gets more of a pool of writers back and doesn't take on as much. Because when you've got a writer who's not, like, the best, and he's writing pretty much every episode, you're not going to get a very good quality overall.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it on a previous podcast on TARDIS crew as well. Yeah, I think Jodie Whittaker is herself is really good, and has the potential to be really good. And I think, yeah, it's the quality of the writing, I think, that we find that we struggle with sometimes, that it's she's trying really hard to deliver something, and she's let down by the kind of the work she's got to work with. So yeah, it's a shame. I think I would love to see someone else take on Jodie Whittaker, and maybe she comes back in the future to a Bulge Doctor special or something and see someone else write it. But it might be quite fun. But yeah, there's potential for so much more with her that we haven't really seen.
Yeah, and it's just a shame the first flip of gender for the Doctor is met with such kind of mediocre storytelling. Yeah. Because I've said it before on other things that it might prove the people that think it's a bad idea right in a way, or make them feel like they're right, because, oh, look, the woman Doctor had all the rubbish stories. It's nothing to do with her. They would have, if David Tennant had had these stories, they would have still sucked, you know, or they would have still not been as good. So yeah. It's that, yeah, it's because you can almost put any Doctor in any story. So, yeah, if you try and put any of the other Doctors in those stories, they wouldn't work either. It wouldn't change, really.
Although I think the difference between, like, say, putting Whittaker in and then putting someone like Paul McGann or Peter Capaldi in is, I just think naturally they're probably better actors. They can do more with what they're given, which isn't bashing on Whittaker, but she doesn't elevate it as much as some other Doctors will.
I think it's hard to sort of see what the potential would be. There's no heaven sent. There's no Pandorica speech. There's no Blink or Human Nature. You know, that kind of, all of those big stories where the Doctors really get the shine. So I think it's a shame. But
there's too many characters too. She has too many companions, so she doesn't stand out in the way that other Doctors do, because she's bouncing off so many people, and then the companions aren't always so distinct either. So that's a problem.
Yeah, she's a very, very passive Doctor, which is a shame for a female Doctor.
It's quite like Peter Davison, how he was, but she doesn't have the moodiness he did.
I think because she's so passive sometimes, it's hard to kind of... she doesn't seem like she has much agency in her own stories, which I think is a problem, particularly for a first female Doctor. But anyway, let's move on then to Legend of the Sea Devils, which we're all kind of coming this kind of literally fresh after airing. I think it literally finished airing, 25 minutes ago?
22, based on the
time. Yeah, we've jumped straight onto this recording, so I'll be making a note as we go. But Craig, what do you think of the episode overall?
I'm glad we're recording it so soon after, because any later and I would have forgotten about it. I just found it really uninteresting. There wasn't really much to it. Some of the character beats, which we'll probably talk about, I thought were interesting, and it furthered some of those. But in terms of the Sea Devils as a threat, the overall story surrounding them, it's almost like a, you know, episode 3 or whatever of your standard series, the one that is just like, yeah, whatever, this is... We're just getting into this now. It's nothing's at stake. We're just getting used to the concept. It's a bit weird that this is a special, because it just feels so routine. It reminded me of the last Easter special in a way, actually, although I thought that was better. Planet of the Dead, I thought that was actually much more fun than this. I remember it for one thing, whereas I won't remember this in about a week or so.
I mean, I quite enjoyed it, to be honest. I've seen a little bit of the general consensus, and it's not very positive towards it.
Yeah. What did you think generally of the episode then, Ben?
Yeah, I did really enjoy it. It's probably... I'll probably get flack for saying this now, but it's probably up there in probably some of my top 13th Doctor episodes. Although normal special length would be like almost an hour. This was normal episode length, 47 minutes, one of her shortest episodes. And it did feel at times quite rushed. So you can definitely tell, like, some bits were taken out, which probably was a detriment to it overall, but it did move it along quite a fast pace, at least. We didn't have a lot of standing around discussing things.
I mean, for me, I think it was... I mean, it's interesting you mentioned the last Easter special there, Craig. I thought there was some similarity between them two. They both had some great visuals. I thought visually there was some stuff I really liked about this episode. It looked quite beautiful in moments. There was some good shots there, like the TARDIS in the ocean and the pirate ship on the ocean as well. but it was all, it looked very, very glossy, but not much substance really underneath on it. And I think, it seemed very similar in tone to that one.
Well, parallel I've picked up on, actually, with Planet of the Dead. Both of these Easter specials feature modes of transport that shouldn't usually fly, that do fly. First a bus, then a pirate ship.
Yeah,
that's right, yeah.
Yeah, so let's get into it then. So what did you think of this, of the CD? I'm interested in your thoughts, Craig, because we were quite excited because we've watched the originals, and we actually, our last podcast was looking back at the 1972 original debut of the Sea Devils. So we've put quite different opinions to you. What were your thoughts on the Sea Devils in this episode?
I didn't find them in any way interesting. I didn't think they stood out as an antagonist. I did find it mildly diverting that they were trying to reclaim the planet that they thought were there, was theirs. But I was wondering, what about the Silurians? They were doing the same thing. So did the Silurians and the Sea Devils fight each other for dominance at some point? Maybe that's a story we need to see, because there's few claims being staked on Earth at this point, isn't there?
Well, I would say they had a falling out after Warriors of the Deep, but actually that's set in the future for these guys.
Yeah.
It's just like, going to flood the entire Earth. Sure, your cousins won't be very happy, but...
Well, that's it. They did establish in the classic era that the Sea Devils and the Silurians were basically offshoots of all the same race. So, yeah, there was an episode.
All right, okay.
It's not a great episode, but a great story, but there's a Fifth Doctor story which has the Sea Devils and the in their second episode, the second story that they had, teaming up with the Silurians to fight humanity. So, yeah, you'd think there'd be some Silurians going, what the hell are you doing, basically flooding the Earth? You know, it's our planet too, but... I don't know, maybe that's a future post-apocalyptic story where they're both fighting for dominance. I don't know.
Yeah. Although I did feel like the Sea Devils in this story, I do like the Sea Devils, but they didn't appear to be in as much as I thought they would. They just kind of felt like they were there only in about half the episode. Yeah. Didn't have much agency to it.
Quite possibly. What did you think of the design of them, Craig?
I thought they looked cool, but I just kept wondering why I should care about them.
Yeah.
Why they stood out as an antagonist. I know it's, for some people, it's a big deal to see them back because they're one of the classic monsters they haven't got around to yet. But then, this is the story that they do with them? Okay. I feel like more could have been done. As you say, they aren't in the episode very much. And the episode is more about the Chinese captain and so on, which, yeah, I guess that's your through line. But yeah, I'm struggling to remember what they did. They tried to steal a ship and flood the Earth, and there's a little pocket under the ocean that they live in.
Mm.
That's about it.
Yeah.
They look cool, though. They did look cool.
I thought as an update design of the original 1970s version, I think you did a pretty good job. I mean, they actually talk in this time, which they don't in the original versions, do they?
They do talk in the Sea Devils, but not very much.
Oh, okay.
Warriors of the Deep, I think they probably do at some point, but not much. Yeah. I think the Silurians take more of that there. But the voices are quite similar. I also did pick out, like, when the Sea Devils were being stabbed and sliced. It's continuing the trend. Sea Devils and Warriors of the Deep are now Legend of the Sea Devils. The Doctor's there, they all get massacred. These guys don't fare well.
Yeah, three stories and they've all been absolutely wiped out. Yeah, it's not great.
But yeah, I picked up on, when they were dying, their screams. It was the exact same scream from the Sea Devils.
Yeah.
I liked that.
Definitely. And you had Craig Ellsback, who played Carvanista in the Flux six-parter, so he was the Marcius. I guess he was the
Marcissus.
Marcissus, maybe.
Actually,
says
his name in it.
Yeah, you know, online you mean that's okay. How it says. But I don't think he was the lead Sea Devil.
He was indeed.
Yeah, yeah.
Statue boy.
Is he the BBC Doug Jones? Then they'll just shove him in any makeup that they want to.
Well, I did get kind of strong attempts at kind of capturing that Pirates of the Caribbean magic a few times on the episodes. It wasn't quite as fun as that, but it was, trying to capture them.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of pirate stories, so this had a lot of work to do going in. I remember Curse of the Black Spot, dreading that episode because it was a pirate story. I'm not huge on those. I don't know, it's just a personal hang-up of mine, so I tried not to hold that against it. And to be fair, it didn't really feel like a pirate story. The only bit they had was the usual trope of, I'm going to dress like a pirate, you look stupid, that kind of stuff. You know, time travellers as pirates, it's that.
I mean, I'm kind of with you on that. Like, I like pirates in general, but Doctor Who pirate stories, as I think I said it this in the Eve of the Daleks review we did, they've never really worked for me. Like, even Curse of the Black Spot with my favourite Doctor isn't great. I'm not a huge fan of it. This I did enjoy a lot more, though.
So is this your favourite pirate Doctor Who story now, or is it still the one with the Badger Space Pirates?
Okay, if we're going other media, probably Badger Space Pirates. If you're going TV, which I... I'm probably missing one off. Oh yeah, actually, there we are. The Smugglers, The Pirate Planet, because I guess that counts. Curse of Black Spot and Legend of the Sea Devils. I'm probably missing some. If I am, don't at me. This is probably my favourite of them.
Fair enough, then. I think visually I liked it, but yeah, I agree. There wasn't much depth to it. What did you think of the characters then? So let's start with Crystal Yu as Madame Ching. What did you think of her performance and the character?
I thought she was good, although she didn't have a lot to work with. It's a standard trope of Chinese women having to prove herself to be as good as the men type thing. So she just acts more tough and...
Yeah.
Everybody around her is afraid of her, which was fine. I thought it was fine, but I just think that they could have done more with her, because what you've got is the Doctor and her main companion are women. So they could be doing something with that. They could be doing that. Yeah, we get it. We understand this, having to work that bit harder or whatever. But they don't really dip into it. It's all very surface level, which is hilarious for an episode that's set a lot of it under the sea. It's all on the surface.
Well, I mean, apparently, I was reading in the latest Doctor Who magazine that Crystal Yu has had experience of, like, playing Ching before in something else. I don't remember quite what. So she knows the character. But even then, it's like, it's based on this real person, a real, possibly one of the nastiest pirates, which you don't really hear about her much. And yet, if that is who they're basing her on, you don't really see that. You don't see her being a bloodthirsty pirate or anything. All she does is she inadvertently kills a man, feels bad about it, and tries to get treasure to rescue people. Mm. It's not really a bad pirate move.
Yeah, there was a lot of humility to her character, which I wasn't expecting. I was expecting to be more ruthless.
Yeah.
And,
the previews I'd seen going in, it's like she seemed like she should be a lot more ruthless.
She's a bit benevolent as well, because she's like, yeah, you guys can join the crew, whatever.
Yeah.
On you come.
I think she was fine. I liked her performance, but I can't say I loved it, because you're right, Craig, there isn't really much depth. I mean, that's the thing with all these characters. I think if you look at Yin Ki, the son of the guy who gets murdered, who has the talisman, I thought that character, Marlo Chan Rees, I didn't think he had really much to his performance as a kind of sidekick to Dan. And even the other pirate, Ji-hun, played by Arthur Lee, costume was interesting, but there wasn't really much to this kind of 16th century Chinese pirate captain either.
Yeah.
No, it felt like they were rushing through the story, which cost the characters a lot of character, really.
Yeah, which I think is in part to like the cut runtime, because I think it is established it was cut down. So all three of like the side piratey characters felt like, I kept thinking like, actually not doing as much. I thought they'd have more of a presence this episode. I'd say, really, if you go for terms of presence this episode, it's the Doctor and Yaz, and a bit the Sea Devils, and the others kind of just off to the side a bit.
Yeah. Again, Dan, I mean, I like John Bishop, but I can't say we're now, this is now episode 9 with him, and... episode 8, sorry.
Eight, yeah. Story 3, essentially.
Yeah, his third story. He's 8 episodes. And I don't really know anything about Dan. I don't get a sense. He's kind of just there. He's not particularly wowing me. I kind of feel like he's there just to have another companion. And in this story, he was there just to give Yin Ki and Madame Ching something to do off while the Yaz and Doctor were doing their own adventures. Yeah. I think if you'd taken Dan out of the equation, I don't think he would have there would have been anything missing from the story.
I think what they want is like a Graham replacement now Bradley Walsh is gone.
Yeah.
And yet once they do that, they're like, well, actually, no one's really going to be able to top Bradley Walsh, are they? So I guess he's here.
Yeah.
He's doing things-ish.
He's just a terminally nice guy, really. Yeah. That's his character, isn't he? He's just a nice guy. And he's sort of there as a buffer for the Doctor and Yaz, which he couldn't be in this episode because he wasn't around them very much. And then you've got, I mean, there's interesting stuff associated with Dan. There's the, what's it, 5 years he spent travelling the globe with Yaz in a Indiana Jones adventure?
Yeah.
A couple of years anyway. It's more time than you've seen. And yeah, you don't really get any sense that he's changed as a result of that, which is a shame. You know, it's just, again, surface level stuff. They're just telling you what's going on rather than actually doing anything with it.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, something like that, it should impact them. But actually, when you just said that, like, they spent a few years travelling the Earth, I had completely forgotten about that. They never mention that. It doesn't change them at all. You could just think, oh yeah, he was just there for a bit of flux, did Eve of the Daleks, he's come here, done.
Yeah. I don't see what purpose Dan really serves the story. I think, you know, they had an opportunity here to have this all-female team. You know, a female doctor and a female companion for the first time ever on the show's history. And I think they could have just done that without... I mean, Dan just feels like just a... Like, there were bits in Flux, maybe bits in either Daleks. And again, bits here with Madame Ching and Yin Ki as well, where Dan was there just so there was a character the audience could understand or relate to, I guess, as a companion character in those situations. But I don't think he needed it at all. I think they should have just focused more narrowly on Yaz and the Doctor, you know, over Flux and Daleks and this story, and that would have been fine.
Yeah,
he's like, he was like comedic relief in Flux and a bit so in Daleks and here, but then in these specials, he's basically just there to force Thasmin to actually reveal itself to each other. Like, because if he wasn't there, Yaz and the Doctor probably wouldn't have those conversations, at least not as soon. But once he's done his matchmaking, what else is he there for?
I think that's the question, isn't it?
Yeah, because, like, he gets that, and then...
Yeah, I think that's a problem. I mean, let's move on to the Doctor and Yaz. There was a bit more focus on them in this episode. What, Craig, what do you think of the whole relationship between them in Legend of the Sea Devils?
I've always found their relationship interesting, particularly when they've started leaning into Yaz being in love with her, which is a common thing with the companions, isn't it? Ever since the revival, certainly, all the companions, pretty much, except Donna, have fallen in love with the Doctor or had an attraction to the Doctor. So yeah, it's nothing new. But I think the way they're playing it is new, because the Doctor is reciprocating it, which he did with Rose, granted, which I didn't really buy into, to be honest.
No, I hated the Tev Doctor and Rose relationship, actually, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm buying it here because the actors are making it work. Mm. Otherwise, I would be questioning, hang on, the Doctor regards humans as being this like lower life form in a way, couldn't see him or herself being attracted to a human because they're just so far removed from each other, which is a trait of previous Doctors, not this one as such. But yeah, I buy into it. And when she said, you're one of the greatest people I've ever met, or the greatest person I've ever met, or whatever the line was, I bought it. And you get the sense, yeah, they've had adventures, they've become a bit more equal, as in Yaz really challenges the Doctor, calls her out on lies that she tells or mistakes that she makes, things like that. So she's not just going along for the ride, she really wants to learn everything. You see her properly learning how the universe works in previous stories. So yeah, I really buy it. And the Doctor still being insensitive around the whole, when she says something about being a date and then doesn't realise how much of a trigger word that is. And then she picks up on it later, she goes back to it. I thought that was good. That was really good stuff. I don't know how their relationship will play out. Tragically, I imagine.
I'd imagine so.
She'll be around for the soft reboot that's upcoming.
Well, I mean, she's dying next episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's some things that do absolutely work. I think, while I still don't think Yaz is as fully developed as you could be, because I think Yaz is technically now the longest companion in Doctor Who history in terms of the episode, in terms of chronology of episodes airing. So from the first episode when it aired to, I guess, the centenary special, Yaz will have been in Doctor Who longer than any other companion, you know?
Yeah, I think so, but it almost doesn't feel like it.
It doesn't feel like, I still feel like I need to know a lot more from Yaz. I do like... I like the relationship with the 13th Doctor. I like that she challenges and tries to learn from her. And, you know, I certainly feel that. And I think this whole, what they call it, Thasmin, aren't they? This is the kind of the term for this relationship online, is, I think, born out of the kind of connection between the actresses and the way they've played it as well. I don't think it was something that Chibnall originally planned, did he, Ben?
No, I think, like, Jodie saw, like, the fans wanting it or something and made it happen or something. But, yeah. I mean, what you're saying, like, Yaz being one of the best women the Doctor's ever met, I can buy that with 13. Ever?
Yeah.
Maybe not. But I am glad, like, for example, they reference River here.
Yeah, the wife, yes.
Yeah. And Yaz's like, wait, what? I'm glad they do that. But also the Doctor, rather than, like, what they were doing with Rose, the Doctor here is more like, See, I do like you, but I am very aware it's not going to last. Maybe that's because time told her you're going to die soon, or maybe partly just because she knows from past experience, like Rose, it doesn't last.
Yeah.
Well, the Doctor's always got a very short memory, don't they? Yeah. I suppose that's the term that you can use now. Mm. Because they only ever seem to focus on who they're with at the moment and what they're doing at that moment, because they wouldn't be able to continue otherwise. They have to compartmentalise their history. And it happened a lot with Tennant, where he would sort of look into the middle distance and think about something that happened a long time ago. It's the, you know, that whenever Sarah Jane turned up, he was like, well, I need to get away from this. This is in my past. I can't be thinking about this again, and so on. So, yeah, I can buy that the Doctor will believe that Yaz is the best person she's ever met. Maybe she means in that incarnation, but she's probably not thinking much before her current life, really. Especially with all her past being locked away, I think she's trying to keep a strong grasp on who she is in this moment, rather than her long, long, even longer than she knows history.
Yeah, I think the whole, I think she says a line, you're the greatest person I've ever known, including my wife. What was the reference to River there? And I, when I heard it, I kind of went, really? You know, is Yaz like the greatest companion we've had on the show? I'm thinking, but I don't know anything about Yaz, really. And that's frustrating for me. But I think you're right. If you frame it within the 13th Doctor's lifetime, I think Yaz has been that constant from the beginning. So I can absolutely buy that. The one thing I really like as well is how Jodie Whittaker plays it. She almost plays the Doctor's, I'd almost say neurodiverse, in that she this social awkwardness, and she doesn't quite know how to handle relationships and human connections.
I mean, I'd say that's one of probably the more defining traits of her Doctor. Mm. Not saying she has many I can pick out, but like awkwardness around people is definitely one of them.
Yeah, and I think I know they tap into the at the end. I think she says at the end, I can't fix myself to anyone, because she's learned this trauma that, you know, as soon as she connects someone, she regenerates, the companion leaves, or something happens, and, you know, and the cycle happens over and over again. And I guess there is, you know, the elements of constant loss of Doctor companion. I'll go back to, I guess, from Susan way back in the 60s, the granddaughter in the first Doctor. But
who, admittedly, she never went back for.
No.
Well, but, on TV.
But I think there is a learned trauma of, well, I can't really get close, because it's always time is always finite in terms of those relationships. Yeah, some companions will cross regeneration, like Clara did, I guess Rose did, I think Sarah Jane did in the original as well.
Tegan technically did, Adric, Nyssa. Yeah,
there were a few, but I think for the most part, it's like the companion within that Doctor's lifetime, and then the companion generally goes before the Doctor regenerates as well. So yeah, there's this constant sense of loss in the Doctor's life. So he wants to be close to Yaz, but actually she knows she's going to die at some point soon. It's all been kind of prophesied, very very kind of David Tennant-y type, which I think Chibnall's Doctor Who does a lot, where it's like the prophesied death of the Doctor. But
it's basically the same,
but I like this. I kind of like more this kind of, she doesn't actually know how to connect, you know, that she was almost like, when she was saying about all the awkwardness around the date thing and this episode. Yeah, I kind of felt that scene on the beach, it's always a beach, the same with Doctor and Rose, wasn't it? It's always on a beach. But I kind of felt that when she was trying to articulate that her not being able to fix herself to anyone, she was struggling to get the words out herself, because actually she doesn't know how to connect. So I think that's more interesting. Actually, Yaz wants someone who isn't necessarily capable of reciprocating, not just because of the learned trauma of loss, but actually because that person she's interested in doesn't really know how to connect.
Yeah, that was a bit of a Matt Smith trait as well, although it was done differently, as in he wasn't really interested in making those kind of connections, and he was just alien and didn't understand. It was his lines around, you know, she wants to know if you go out for texting and scones or whatever it is, and stuff like that, he would say. It was just that kind of cutesy, I don't really know, I'm a bit clueless, whereas she is aware that she kind of wants to make that connection but is almost afraid to. So she doesn't quite come across as alien in that way, in the way that Matt Smith did. Peter Capaldi just pretended he didn't care, at least to begin with. He just said, yeah, whatever. I'm not interested in being friends with anybody. It's that line that he says about Clara. This is Clara. She cares, so I don't have to, and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's a riff on what we've seen before with the Doctor and how they struggle to relate to companions, which the David Tennant era, obviously, he was very personable. He was making friends with everybody, which made it even worse when he had to say goodbye to them. You had that,
hence the prolonged tour.
Yeah, the long montage of him just paying a final visit to all the people that had been important to him. And ever since then, I guess, there's been a concerted effort to not do that. So I mean, the Doctor being close to Yaz is against her nature, I guess, at this point.
Against it now, yeah.
Yeah. So let's move on to a few other things as well then. So what did you think of Madame Ching's ship then? Because actually the entire ship was built, the set was built. Did you think the set design was good in this episode?
The set design was good. The CGI was pretty ropey, though. Whenever they cut to the outside, I was like, I can see what's going on. I can see the pixels here. But again, it's Doctor Who. It's just the visual effects budget isn't massive, is it? But they've done better in the past. But yeah, I thought the set design was great. It looked really cramped. It looked really unsafe. So yeah, it was interesting that they built the set. I thought they might have borrowed a set from somewhere. That was how good it was.
No, I think it was great. And I think it allowed some... I think probably the most fun part of the episode is that whole kind of classic pirate sword fighting sequence when you had Yaz, Dan and the pirates taking on the Sea Devils with the kind of electric swords and the Doctor kind of flying around doing that very undoctory forward roll in the air as well. There were some fun moments.
I do want to point out as well, while we're kind of on the CGI stuff, the cinematography this episode is probably the one of the best it has looked.
See, yeah,
Visuals to it, like, I really like the green smoke, but that's my kind of green. I love green. But even just like the shots of the ocean and the sky and the stars moving in Ching's eye,
I think it was an interesting one because I think I do agree sometimes with CGI. I didn't really have a problem with it. I think I was enamored with things like the TARDIS land at the bottom of the ocean and they're opening the doors and the fish.
That looked great, yeah.
That looked beautiful. And the shots of Ching's pirate ship with the red sails on the ocean as well against the kind of like setting sun as well. There were some moments where, well, this looks beautiful. This looks big and cinematic. Where were the CGI? You know, I think the sea creature is probably where you're talking about the CGI. It was kind of... It was cool, but it looked very, very, very kind of ropey at the same time.
And now a moment of edited in silence for the fact it was not the Mirka, or at least wasn't referred to as the Mirka.
Yeah, Craig, I urge you to go on YouTube later and search up the Mirka from Warriors of the Deep. They had the idea in the age of this walking sea dragon, and it's basically a guy in a green hobby horse costume walking down a corridor.
Not even finished. It hasn't even finished.
One of the most hideous things Doctor Who ever done, but you've got to admire the ambition.
And the karate kick.
Yeah, some karate kicks the sea dragon. It's an interesting sequence. But it's not classic Doctor Who at its best, I'll tell you that. But with this big sea creature, I'm assuming it was supposed to be the Mirka, kind of done on a modern CGI budget, but
they never referred to it as the Mirka. They called it something else. They didn't quite catch what, but it wasn't the Mirka. So unless either they've named it something else, or maybe considering this is like the earliest we've ever seen the Sea Devils, this was like a cousin of the Mirka?
Possibly. I don't know.
Chibnall's just baiting this.
Quite possibly depends.
It didn't have enough of a presence in the episode anyway.
Yeah. I don't know what he did later on. It was kind of, it took the TARDIS and it was going to attack the ship and they got it with cannonballs and then it just stopped. And
The TARDIS, what happened to the TARDIS? Because it got eaten. Did the Doctor dematerialise it and it was pulled to the Sea Devil ship? I don't know, because it was eaten and then it was on its side by the Sea Devils. Is the Sea Devil ship the sea monster? Is that what it's meant to be? Like a mechanical sea monster? But then they refer to it as something else while they're in the ship and it's found something. It just doesn't make sense. And at the end, like, they just left it there, or is it pulled into like the really dense whirlpool that kills it?
I don't know. There are some plot holes. That absolutely. I mean, what in terms of the plot then, what do you think of the mystery of Jin Hun's missing ship and going back into the 16th century and find out there and the Jin Hun's deal with the Sea Devil? And obviously you got this the legend of the
treasure of the Flor de Mar or something.
That's the one, the kind of the Portuguese treasure, which is very infamous in legend generally. Craig, what do you think of the kind of mystery over the shipwreck and the Sea Devil and Jin Hun and all that was happening? Did that kind of make sense to you? Or did that have any kind of clear narrative?
It made sense, but I don't think it was there for long enough to be a mystery. because they bring it up and then instantly go and solve it. So it's not really anything. But it did remind me of some previous Doctor Who stories. The I forget what it's called, but the Capaldi one with the ghosts.
Under the and then, lake before the flood.
Yeah, so he goes back in time and then that gives you the other piece of the puzzle. And then a bit on the Christmas episode where David Tennant goes back to see the formation of the Earth to understand what the solution to the mystery is. Again, those were... They spent more time giving you the question. So the question was posed and then it was immediately answered. So I didn't really feel like it was a mystery, to be honest, because it was, there's this mysterious treasure, let's go find out. And then they go find out. And that was about it.
I think, again, it's a I think a lot of the things this episode is a victim of cut runtime. And then what's that going to have enough?
Another 5 minutes wouldn't have made a difference, I don't think, really.
No, I think you hit the nail on the head there, Craig. It's like, there is a mystery, and then, oh, done, fixed, move on, next thing. And I think maybe that's a problem. I think if you had more of the mystery, as soon as you found out what was the mystery, okay, well, they went back in time, ship was taken by Sea Devils, what happened to the ship? Oh, it's a mechanical ship we saw 10 minutes ago, it's the same thing.
As soon as the Doctor went, like, there's no ship back, I was like, oh, well, it's the flying one then, isn't it?
Absolutely. I guess it's, I think... This is probably the problem. Visually, I thought cinematography was lovely. There was some lovely music in it as well. And you know, some of the visuals are great. But I agree with some of the CGI, particularly the sea creature. And I think just the characters themselves, there wasn't enough. I think the sea pirates, there wasn't enough to their story. Despite some attempts by the actors. And I think if you apart from Doctor and Yaz... I can't think of any kind of character moments that really resonate for me.
Same. Dan calling Diane at the end, which I didn't really think was going to happen, but okay. It's like, that almost just feels like set up for, are they going to get together and that's how he leaves in the centenary? Like,
quite possible. It's just set it up, I think. The one line I did like early on, though, when the Doctor's in the Sea Devil lair and the Sea Devil says, you talk to secure yourself time to think, I thought it was a really nice, astute way of how the Doctor works, you know?
Yeah, and then she's quite protestful, like, oi, don't say that. I'm not saying you're wrong, but shush.
I think a lot of Doctors do that. I think David Tennant's Doctor was very much an example. He would talk a lot, and what's going on, things were happening, or he's working out in his head. And I think the 13th Doctor does that a lot. She talks a lot. I think it's just sometimes the dialogue is a bit clunky for her.
Yeah, she talks quickly, and it's supposed to pass for clever dialogue when she's not actually saying anything.
I noticed like when she was like connecting the wires, but she had to hold it there, and told Yaz to go because they had 50 seconds left or they were going to die and stuff. And then Ji-hun came and was like, I'll do it. I just immediately got flashbacks of the Timeless Children when Ko-Sharmus was like, I'll activate the Death Particle, you go. It was felt very similar to that. Like, the Doctor was going to sacrifice himself, and one of the side characters comes along and goes, no, I need to sacrifice myself, you go.
Yeah. Did Jin-Hun's sacrifice resonate at all, Craig?
No. Yeah. Not at all. I didn't find it in any way impactful. It was the same as sort of when the Doctor was saying, okay, we're going to blow this thing up. It's going to become the densest place on Earth. And Yaz was like, we'll have time to get out, right? And then she's like, yeah, sure. And you can tell she's not sure. And again, that was a common David Tennant thing. And you would always have someone within the story who would jump in at the last minute and prevent him from killing himself. And that's essentially what happened here. But it didn't resonate with me at all because we've seen it all before. And they didn't really spend enough time underscoring that this wasn't a sacrifice either. It was raised, just like with the mystery, it was raised and then immediately resolved.
I mean, I at least understood why he did it. It made sense why he did it. It wasn't just a left field, oh, I am side character, I must die now. I get why, but...
there's no depth to it. Yeah. It's the same thing with Qin taking Yin Ki as part of her pirate crew at the end. Like, I don't think he had a choice in becoming a pirate. She just said, you're mine now. But again...
I kind of liked it.
Yeah, but again, the whole thing of, you know, his father died, not had a place, and then she takes him on, and she's like, he almost becomes like a second child. There's a whole thing about her and two sons.
Third child, technically.
Third child, because she has two sons, part of this crew that have been taken prisoner. You know, you get this nuggets of stuff there, of character, but it's very, very glossed over. There's not enough, really, to kind of get into.
And it's another parallel they could have drawn with the Doctor, because he or she picks people up and gives them purpose, which is what she was doing. Or at least that's the high-level interpretation you can make of it. But again, they didn't do anything with it. It's just yeah, it's, you have all, that's something Chibnall does a lot, actually. There's lots of places it could go, and there's lots of obvious things that could be thrown in as a couple of lines to enhance the scene, and he just misses it.
It's a common theme, isn't it? We've talked about it before. You know, you see the better story in there, and I know you can always pick up and go, actually, what if this happened, what that happened? But I think it's a common theme in a lot of Chibnall stories, unfortunately, where you go, just this or that, or this, you know, add a few lines here, a little bit there, a bit more depth to this bit situation or this character, and suddenly you've got a stronger episode.
Yeah. Plus, two things I noticed as well, like, the Doctor and Shing barely interacted. She's like, oh, wow, cool historical figure. Okay, bye now. Like, they just don't really talk. And also, the Doctor and Dan, it's a common trait with them. Like, Flux, Eve of the Daleks, and now Legend of the Sea Devils. The Doctor and Dan have had, what, maybe in about an hour or so talking to each other total across these episodes? They barely interact, which, fair, that does develop 13 and Yaz more, which is good. But even so, Dan just gets shafted, like, he doesn't do anything Doctor's presence.
I go back to what was the point of Dan. I mean, the best moment of Dan in the episode was when he takes out those sea devils and Jin-Hoon basically asks where he learns to get his enemies, and he goes, you should meet my mother. It was quite a funny line from John Bishop. But
to be fair, that's possibly a reference to War of the Sontarans, because his parents were the ones who thought the walk.
Yeah, but it's a slightly throwaway bit of humour, and that's it. And it's like, that's the only thing I remember from Dan is that one line. And the kind of the culturally inappropriate pirate costume,
yeah,
I guess.
Even that, it's like his appearance is meant to just be comic relief here.
Yeah. Again, there's a nugget there. You've got Yaz playing a joke on Dan and it's like there's a nugget of his kind of, we saw it in Eve of the Daleks, there's a nugget of the Dan-Yaz relationship, which probably goes back to what you were saying, Craig, about that 3 years when they were traveling the Earth together in Flux. They've actually spent a lot of time there. They've bonded. They've gone through a lot more, actually, as you went through Graham and Ryan. But we just don't see it. That's a shame.
And it doesn't affect them either. It's like, once again, it's going to be down to Big Finish to develop a relationship between two characters when it should be there on the screen, when they inevitably make their Yaz, Dan, Jericho spin-off.
Absolutely, it's going to happen, isn't it?
It's like Big Finish are the ones who actually had to develop the start of the Jack Yanto relationship.
Yeah.
On the screen that just, oh yeah, it's here now.
Yeah, definitely.
He had the line about the app on his phone, the Constellations, but I just downloaded an app on my phone. That was another one.
Yeah.
It was all right as a line.
It's all right, the reaction
to it was funnier. I don't understand half of what you say, you're not the first person to have said that. And
this episode wasn't even fully written by Chibnall; it was co-written. I believe Ella Rhodes, possibly the youngest writer for the revival at 26. Wouldn't say the youngest ever, because when Andrew Smith wrote Full Circle, he was 18. But
yeah.
She's definitely one of the youngest.
So it was
And then the director, yes.
Yeah, so yeah, and then the director was Halo Wang, who's a Chinese writer director based in London as well. So
apparently this is her first TV job, and fair, she's done really well at it.
I thought some of the direction was good. I think it's just I think for me it's that script and that character work that is missing. I thought from a direction point of view, some of those set pieces and the fight sequence and stuff look great.
You can definitely tell that's why one of the episodes, which ended up being Eve of the Daleks, had to be shafted slightly in terms of budget so they could throw more at this and the Centenary and Flux.
I definitely got a sense that the budget that was taken for Eve of the Daleks was put in this episode.
It was probably put a bit in next episode as well, to be fair. Or they were just given a better budget for next episode, considering the Centenaries actually wasn't originally going to happen. I presume this is probably the Eve of the Daleks budget given here, so that could have its own budget. And I'm rambling now. Well,
you are rambling a bit.
The bizarre thing about it is, it's been known for a while, we have so many stories left with the Doctor, or this Doctor, and it's, why is this one of them? Why is this fairly disposable script one of the final stories? And I know a lot of people said that about Planet of the Dead at the time as well, another comparison, because it was just a bit of a romp in the middle of this stuff. But I think that was needed at the time, actually, because it was surrounded by so much intensity that it was good to just have a bit of a romp. And then they did have those little bits and pieces in there. You had the bit of the foreshadowing of the, you know, your time is ending soon or whatever. And then you can get into the Waters of Mars and all this stuff. But even at that, there was another three stories left. So you could afford to just have a bit of a romp. Okay, one of them was two-part story, but at the same time, there was essentially 3 hours of television left, whereas in this, there's one.
Yeah.
So they can't really be affording to just have a bit of a laugh. And just, you know, arguably the last episode was that.
That's it. I was going to say, I think Eve the Daleks was probably quite a good palate cleanser. This would have been a good palate cleanser for Flux, but both of them together, a little bit too light. I was expecting more depth to it, more nuance to this episode, perhaps. Yeah. Maybe Phil should be thinking that because, you know, we'd be disappointed with some of the Chibnall scripts before, but I was expecting something a little bit more special. Eve the Daleks was light and fluffy, and I was almost okay that it was a New Year's Day, it was a festive special, essentially. And it was kind of immediately after all the high intensity of Flux. So I was kind of okay with Eve the Dalek. I was quite positive towards it because it was fun, it was light and fluffy. And then we get another story which is kind of light and fluffy again. You know, you haven't got that balance.
Yeah, this was mentioned to be like Jodie's last chance to have fun as the Doctor. Okay, cool. Wasn't that last episode?
Yeah.
Because what you said, the parallel, like we've got about an hour left. I think it's a bit more because it's meant to be feature length, but feature length Doctor Who tends to go about 77
minutes.
But
not about an hour.
We've not got as much as Tennant had. Because even like Capaldi, I guess his last fun one was probably Eaters of Light, and then you had about three episodes left.
Mm.
The Doctor's definitely had a few more heavier ones at the end, but Whittaker's getting the light ones, which I think does fit how her run's gone, but it's not the best way to do it.
No. Any kind of final thoughts from anyone on Legend of the Sea Devils? We'll talk brief about trade. I've got some comments from people online as well, but any kind of final thoughts, Craig, on this story?
Not really. Just that I think it's kind of forgettable for all the reasons that I've said, and it is a shame that that's one of Jodie Whittaker's final stories, especially since you do get the impression that this is just one thing that the Doctor and Yaz are doing. Can we not see a more interesting one? It's almost like they don't talk about any other adventures, but it's almost like they talk about a better episode in the episode itself, nearly, because we're trying to get to a beach and we're here and that kind of stuff. And then the Doctor being surprised about the fact that the TARDIS got drifted off course. It happens all the time. You shouldn't be surprised. It should be a, not again, let's find out why we're here and then go over there.
I also feel one of the worst things the episode did, it did kind of do dirty the Sea Devils. It's their first appearance since 1984, and then this is what they get.
Yeah.
They were good in it, but again, as you said, Craig, it's like, if you're not a classic Who fan, you don't love the Sea Devils before, it's like, why should you care about them? Just the fact they are a returning monster doesn't mean you should immediately care about it. You want the script to actually make you care about them.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's have a couple of comments then before we put the trailer and wrap up then. So, a couple of comments from fellow We Made This Podcast. As Dan Owen says that the show desperately needs a shake-up. And it's not so much the episode itself, it's the show feeling tired. It's all very half-hearted, did what you expect from Doctor Who. Sketchily darn guest stars, music didn't fit the swashbuckling tone needed. Jodie determined to get him through her banter. John Bishop being wooden. Special effects that sometimes impressive and sometimes awful. Yeah, and I think, you know, but he said, at the same time, he's sure that 8-year-olds are probably wearing eye patch and leaping around on the sofas right now. And maybe that's it. I don't know. I mean, obviously, Craig, you and I can be grumpy old men sometimes. I don't know. But Ben, as someone, obviously, who's younger, who's only 16, I think for you, that are up and down.
I mean, it's definitely, I think younger children definitely would appreciate the more fun tone because it's like, oh, cool, look, fishmen. Ooh, pirates. Lovely.
Yeah. And then Kurt said, it kind of numbed me, to be honest. Pacing was all over the place. They were trying to pay homage to classic Who with the different gradings and edits at the beginning. Music choice didn't add anything to the tension. It felt like an episode went from scene to scene with talking in each of them. I'll admit the final scene was okay with Yaz and the Doctor, but it was a little too late. And I think... I think that the Yaz Doctor stuff was the strongest of this, but there wasn't enough of it. And finally, Colin Spencer on Twitter said, worst episode since Return of Doctor Mysterio, convoluted, inaudible, incoherent, and badly acted. So not really much to say about that.
I like the Return of Doctor Mysterio. I thought it was a fun episode.
If you're listening to this, how dare you? Return of Dr. Mysterio is brilliant. Okay, maybe not brilliant, but it's my fun comfort episode. Don't slander it.
Yeah, it's all right.
Please.
I think I'm finding it hard to disagree with it. I had a good time. I enjoyed it. I thought it visually had some lovely moments in it. I appreciate some of the Yaz and Doctor stuff, and I thought the Sea Devils were fairly decent for the visually for their kind of modern reinterpretation. In fact, there wasn't that much different from the classic era, but
all slaughtered, had the same scream, bit off the string vest in their costume.
Yeah.
Dan's point about 8-year-olds jumping around their living room dressed as pirates is an interesting one, because I've said this for a while, but the producers of Doctor Who need to decide what the show is going to be, right? Is it going to be disposable family fluff on a Sunday as it is now night? Or is it going to be a serious contender in the sci-fi landscape? And I think under Russell T Davies and to an extent Moffat, they got the balance right. They were delivering, I mean, the competition was far less than it is now, but they were delivering reasonably intelligent sci-fi with a bit of a family stint to it. But I don't think Chibnall is very good at that balance at all. And they need to make a decision on, is this up here competing with the likes of The Mandalorian and Star Trek Discovery or whatever? Or is it going to be this, we'll just watch this for a bit of fun? And if it is the latter, then they have to, well, I imagine they have to just get away from this whole end of the universe, huge stakes stuff. It would just have to be the Doctor just having adventures. But I've got a funny feeling they've brought in Russell T Davies to make it a contender again.
Quite possibly.
I mean, I'm fairly sure I heard Flux has recently been nominated for a Webby Award or whatever that is. So, hey, but yeah, you're right, because it's like one week you have all the big universe-ending shenanigans of Flux and all the Doctor's origins and all the universe destroyed and everything. And the next week, well, next 2 weeks away when it was aired, you're in a storage facility with Daleks chasing people in a time loop.
Yeah.
And then pirates and fishmen.
Yeah.
And then after this, you're now getting Daleks and Cybermen and the Master and Doctor's death. And
well, I think before we'll call it a trailer in a second, but yeah, I think it's hard to work out what it is. You're right. I think for an episode for an 8-year-old, it's probably a fun episode. They love it. And then, but would they be, would they have been able to follow some of the kind of stuff in Flux going on, all the stuff with her past selves and the trauma and that? And then,
well, we couldn't follow Flux, so what chance has an 8-year-old got?
No, exactly, yeah. So,
I mean, I can imagine like 60-year-olds watching this episode and just going, this just isn't good. I'll just get to the centenary.
Nothing is forever. No regeneration, no life. Beware of the forces that mass against you. And their master.
This is the day you die.
Ace, I haven't heard from the Doctor for nearly 4 decades.
Just because it's only 3 decades for me.
Welcome to the end of your existence.
We have released a special episode that's already gone out on Sunday night talking about the return of classic companions Ace and Tegan. So I know, Craig, you'll be less familiar with those. They were obviously from the 80s era of Doctor Who, but we're incredibly excited for their return. But overall, looking at the trailer, Craig, what do you think about what's coming up on the Centenary special?
So, like I said, nothing about it was really a surprise. I already knew about the two returning companions because I got the same mailing you did. Yeah. But again, I don't know who they are, so I don't know why that's a good thing. Maybe they'll show me.
Trust us.
Yeah. It's when they brought Sarah Jane back, for example, the whole episode was about here's what Sarah Jane was to the Doctor and here's what Rose could be to the Doctor. It was about Rose seeing her potential future, right? That's what that episode was about. So with it being the Centenary special, is it going to be too busy to give those companions much to do, much of substance to do?
Possibly. I think Ace is, I think after Sarah Jane, Ace is one of those companions that everyone's wanted back. She's the last one with Sylvester McCoy, and I think she's definitely one that people are clamoring to have back. But you're absolutely right. Is she being given enough story, folks? I don't know.
I mean, we saw the shot there of the Tegan and Ace with like the guns shooting, I presume Cybermen. They look like Cybermen guns or something. And we mentioned in our bonus episode, like, is this meant to be setting up like a spin-off with Ace and Tegan? Who knows?
I don't know.
But you've got a lot to do in this episode because you've got them, you've got Kate, you've got Vinda, you've got Yazdan having to leave, you've got the Daleks, the Cybermen, the Master, and then 13's regeneration. The regeneration effects on 13 in that trailer look great, actually.
Yeah. Any kind of surprises there on returning villains, or is it just kind of, it was bound to happen?
No. Well, the Phantom of the Opera Cyberman, he's back, isn't he?
Forget his name. I was surprised at that. Ashad,
but you know what? I'm surprised a bit like how, but at the same time I'm glad because I quite liked him as a villain. They get the Timeless Children, the Master's just like, hi, kills him. He's tiny.
Yeah, I thought
he didn't get the resolution he needed.
Yeah, I thought Asher was quite different. I'm quite intrigued to see Asher back actually,
especially versus the Master again.
Yeah,
revenge.
And I don't know, are you a fan of Sacha Dhawan's Master, Craig?
Yeah, I thought he was really good. He has a beard at one point in the trailer, so some time has passed. Maybe he's in prison for a while, I don't know.
Curse of fatal death to sewer for 3,000 years.
Could be, yeah. No, I thought he was really good, and I avoided all the preamble that essentially spoiled that he was coming back. So when they did the actual reveal that whoever it was, the analyst or whatever he was playing, ended up being the master, I was like, oh, that's surprising. And
yeah, it was a good deal.
I'd heard the name Sacha Dhawan rumoured as the master, but I never seen the face of the guy. So I was completely shocked, like, oh, wow. And then when I saw the credits roll and said the master Sacha Dhawan, I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
I thought the reveal was great. I thought it was the best thing about that Spyfall opening episode of the series. And I think he's great. And I think one of the best things they've done in Jodie Whittaker's Doctor Who is Sacha Dhawan's master. Doesn't really make sense with Missy, but that's beside the point.
I mean, at this point, it's basically canonical. He is after her.
Yeah, but I think I would have been surprised if he wasn't back, because I think he's integral to the 13th Doctor. I'm really glad he's back. I think if nothing else, he's...
Plus, time said that the Master will be coming back, basically. As good as...
Yeah, well, I mean, there were loads of rumours. Like, I think there was a filming photo or something which had like a box full of things and it was labelled Master on it or something, and then obviously Vanquisher teases it like, beware the forces that mass against you and their master. Yeah. And also, if you were thinking about it and you had common sense, you could probably reasonably guess the master. Daleks and Tidemen, yeah, of course.
If you want to do that, it's fine. But I think Master's key to a story, and I think it's
the end of time too.
Yeah, it's not a surprise, but it's a welcome return, I think.
Well, the two companion thing that reminded me of the not Journey's End, the episode before it, the subwave thing where they were all just chatting to each other on whatever computers they were near, which makes me wonder, again, it's one of those annoying things that happens to me as fans of this stuff, is, so why weren't they contacted during the events of that, if they're just kicking about on Earth the whole time? The reason is because the audience doesn't know who they are and you would have to explain who they are, but that's what's happening here. So yeah, I hope they do give them enough time, because when they brought Jack back, no one knew who he... Well, you could imagine that there'd be a chunk of the audience that has no idea who he is. Because if you started with the Jodie Whittaker era, you wouldn't know who he is. No. But the one episode where he appeared, it was very much, well, who's that? And then it was just a cameo, really. And then the episode after that, the one that he featured heavily, spent a lot of time explaining who he was, and it was... Exactly the same as the Sarah Jane thing. I used to travel with the Doctor. Here's what happens to you when you stop travelling with the Doctor. Here's how much it changes you. That's what the story was. So I don't know how they're going to do that with those two, again, in such a busy episode. Based on Chibnall's past exploits, I don't think he'll deliver on it. I think he'll just roll them in. It'll all progress and it won't really fit together.
Yeah. Well, I mean, judging by the trailer, the very little I saw... Looking like Ace is the one who contacts Tegan. Why Tegan? Who knows? And then it's just a case of, does Ace know something's happening? Or was it like Kate Stewart? Because obviously she's in it. Did she contact Ace? Contacted Tegan to get a hold of the Doctor? Who knows?
Yeah, because we'll find
Ace
out.
Ace was Sylvester McCoy's companion, yeah?
Yes, then Tegan was with Peter Davison, Tom Baker's final one.
Yeah, I think right, Ace is the most interesting as well, because even though she's more likely to come back, she's the one that never got an ending, because when he turned up in the TV movie, Ace was gone. So we don't really know from a TV point of view what happened to her. So
friend of mine explained to me there was a novel that she wrote or something like
that
suggested they parted on bad terms.
Yeah, it was about 2 years ago, 2020. I hope they reference this in the centenary, because she wrote it. Was this a precursor to this special? Who knows? But yeah, there she meets 13, Graham, Ryan and Yaz, and like, not to spoil it to people who want to read it and haven't already, but let's just say Seven manipulates her one step a bit too far, and that makes her go, I'm done, leaving you.
All right, okay.
Yeah, obviously. Cool, but yeah, there's a lot packed in, so, hopefully won't disappoint, or won't disappoint too much. Hopefully we actually enjoy it. There's the fact that we've got old companions, we've got Sacha Dhawan Masters back, Asher, the Lone Sidemen. There's certainly some fun elements to the final story.
And then even if that isn't as good and it's a bit disappointing, episode after that, Russell T Davies is back, writing the 60th anniversary, probably going to have some old Doctors in it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, so I'm guessing they'll withhold maybe the getting back all her memories thing until, at least for coverage, until the 60th.
Maybe, but considering that's not Chibnall anymore, might be Centenary, might not. Although I heard rumours that that's it, it's done now. It's like, is Ruth going to be in the Centenary? Maybe, maybe not.
I hope so, yeah. Joe Martin's Doctor, yeah, that'd be good.
But she would have to be,
yeah,
I would think.
Yeah. Lots of questions going into that final episode. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see kind of how it wraps up. Okay, that comes to the end of our discussion on Legend of the CDLs. Thank you, Craig, for joining us. Where can people find you online if they want to talk Doc 2, sci-fi, anything else in general with you?
So, mainly I can be found on Neil Before Blog, so neilbeforeblog.co.uk, or just put it into Facebook and Twitter, it'll come up. I review things like Doctor Who, although I'm not going to be reviewing this one. Someone else might be, it depends if they can be bothered, but I'm not going to be. I've said about as much as I can say about it on this podcast. But I review other stuff like Star Trek, Picard at the moment, Strange New Worlds coming up, etc. Arrowverse shows like The Flash. I am one of the five people that still watch that show.
Yep.
Hopefully they'll finish it next season.
Yeah.
There's the other. There's three of us. So three of us are here. So, yeah. Who's reading it then? If nobody's watching. Well. But, yeah, that's a question I don't want to ask myself. Superman and Lois, another thing I'm reviewing. All sorts of stuff. So I review films, so you can find me there. When we made this, I crop up on Podcast 616, Real Talk, other places, just wherever I'm needed, really, I will show up. That a bit like the Doctor, I'll just appear and then get on with a conversation about something. And I have to fulfill this now. The contractual obligation is my personal handle is Nemesis4909 on Twitter, and that is originally a Resident Evil reference, until it later became also a Star Trek reference. So there we go. A couple of my spheres align at once. I just need it to creep into almost everything. I'm sure Nemesis has been mentioned in Doctor Who at some point.
There was Silver Nemesis.
There you go.
There you go. It's not a reference to that.
Brilliant. Thank you. You can find the TARDIS crew by searching Crew TARDIS on Twitter and Instagram. My personal Twitter is Baz Greenland. And you can find me on various other We Made This podcast too, including Dream Game Reformer, Babylon 5 podcast that I co-host with Luke Winch, and like Craig on, you know, everything from Podcast 616 to Real Talk as well. I pop several places as well. So thanks for joining us for the latest episode. And remember, we are part of the We Made This podcast network. Please subscribe to the TARDIS crew and give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you want to help out the network, please consider supporting us on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/WeMadeThis. Doctor is already discussing, so give you a taste of what else you might have missed on the network in a moment. Next time on the TARDIS crew, we'll be discussing my absolute favourite story of Doctor Who, Tom Baker's The Seeds of Doom. So join us again for the TARDIS crew, because somewhere there's danger, somewhere there's injustice, somewhere else the tea is getting cold.
Elsewhere on We Made This. Red and Buried podcast.
I think I nearly burst a blood vessel in my eye. So violent was my reaction to what the abomination that is. The arrogance of Kenneth Branagh, dear God.
I just can't believe that they gave the moustache such a backstory.
Oh, and I'm pissed.
It's a shame, because if you can, and this is a big if you can switch off from Branagh's portrayal of Poirot, which I know you can't, frankly, and aren't willing to, they're actually this. You know, Death on the Nile and his version of Orient Express were really good adaptations for the casual viewer, but
I wish you could see my face right now.
I know. What Agatha was very good at as well, keeping mysteries going, I suppose.
We are Starfleet, a Star Trek podcast.
For example, an episode where we may have revisited Tilly at Starfleet Academy teaching the cadets would have been a really nice break in the action in the second half of the season.
I don't disagree. I think that's, you know, that's certainly something that as we kind of look back and analyze the season as a whole, there might be some opportunities that we can point to say, like, yeah, maybe they could have done something there to flesh that out.
We dig music.
Davey Havok is actually the singer in My Purple Agony, who are a fictional band in Harvey Girls Forever, which is a cartoon that my daughter watches.
Wow, that is amazing.
He's only in one episode, but I watched it and it was like, oh yeah, that is definitely him because he sings in it.
He is the source of so many amazing misheard lyrics. There's one that he sings, "No need to fear me, I'm just another monster," which is very melodramatic, but he sings it so that it sounds like he says he's just another lobster. Which is not the best one. The best one is one of that side project that I mentioned, where lyrics are actually, "I am reaching, I something or other." But he sounds like he screams, "Ah, you've greased me, I shat myself." Which is fucking magnificent. My girlfriend at the time when we did this was massively into AFI, so I used to spend a lot of time being like, "I'm sorry, what did he just say? Did he say something about being greased?"
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.